Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now only 54 shopping days left until Christmas, and you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. I am your host, Joseph Wade. Here with me tonight is my poor beleaguered servant, co-host, my poor beleaguered co-host, Mr. Bradford. Brad, what's shaking?
I hate Mondays.
Would you like some lasagna? Would that make it better?
Yes, that would make it better. How are you doing?
I'm doing just peachy tonight, Brad.
I was going to break out the Ghostbusters, you're my favorite holiday gift guide item, but I can't remember if I would get the line right, so I fell back to Garf.
That's okay. We can talk about the toaster a little bit later, though. Oh, man.
There's two very good toasters in this movie, actually.
There are. Yeah, that's right. Oh, yes. Man. A lot of toaster chat coming up later, folks. But real quick, I just want to say a couple things up front on the show. This is a very special episode. And not just because we're going to talk about like giving and charity and goodwill toward men and all that crap. I mean, we will, but that's not why it's a very special episode. This is a very special episode because today, as we're releasing this, November 1st is Christmas Podcast Day.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hey.
Our merry band of fellow Christmas podcasters have all kind of come together, and we decided to release new episodes today to promote, you know, Christmas podcasts for the coming holiday season. And to celebrate that, we're all tackling different versions of Charles Dickens' immortal classic, Scrooge.
Joe, you should have given me some more advance notice. I would have dressed up. It's way too late to go to the Tux rental place now.
Yeah, I mean, well, this was a very slapdash kind of affair. Staple a top hat to your head if you need to. But, you know, I called it Scrooge. I meant A Christmas Carol. It's called A Christmas Carol. I don't know why this movie can't get that right. But whatever. Tonight we're talking about...
They couldn't get the rights from the Dickens estate.
Yeah, maybe not.
Like no, I don't think that's a thing, is
no,
it?
No, it's too old for that. Like, we can talk about that later, but like, I've always been confused. Like, why do they think it's called Scrooge? I don't know. But anyway, we will link to the other participants in the show notes. Watch out for our links to all these other shows on Twitter, Blue Sky, pretty much everywhere else. It's hashtag Christmas Podcast Day. So go check out everybody else who's talking about Ebenezer Scrooge today. Now,
did some podcast get stuck with Bah Humduck? I must know.
Oh, Lord, I hope not. I remember when they put the call out and they said everybody, you know, do a different version of Scrooge. Like, my very first thought was, I could just re-release the Bah Humduck episode.
No. Well, I'm glad you didn't.
I'm glad we didn't, because I do enjoy talking about Scrooge. This is, in fact, my second time podcasting about this movie. We did an OST party on it for Christmas a couple of years ago. So if you want to hear me talk about the music of this movie, go and check out the OST party episode of Scrooged. It's a great time. But Bradford, how have you been doing, buddy?
I've been doing well. I found some coffee on top of my refrigerator.
Oh boy.
And it was received as a gift. It's a year old at this point. I received it as a Christmas gift last year. It is the Nightmare Before Christmas themed flavored coffees.
Oh no.
Now these were this was a very thoughtful gift for the person that gave it to me, but I don't mess with flavored coffees.
Mm-hmm.
But I took it down off of the top of the fridge the other day when I was cleaning, and I thought I was doing a grave disservice to the show by not testing some of these flavors. So that's a little teaser or a little callback, depending on how things shake out. I'm gonna drink some questionably flavored coffees here on the show before too long. Pretty excited about it.
Yeah, we'll definitely, I feel like I'm pretty confident in saying we'll definitely have that for our next episode. So, you know, come on back and listen to Bradford swig some Tim Burton-esque coffees.
We'll get into it when we get into it, but that's a little preview for you.
he showed me the flavors. There's some really interesting choices in here, but
I'm dreading most of them, to be completely honest. But who knows? Maybe it's actually good. It's probably not good.
I wish you could send me one of them so I could at least like try one with you.
Oh, I will absolutely send you any and all of them if you want. I'm only going to make a small sample of each one unless I really like it.
Okay.
And even if I really like it, I guess I should send you ones that I really like. That's probably nicer.
Well, all I'm really asking for is one so that I can take part in this experiment with you. But no, you don't have to do that for me.
Tell you what, I'll mail you one and we'll go on this journey together.
That sounds great. Hey,
or maybe if you're feeling very adventurous, I can mail you all a bit of all five and we can do like a flight together.
I swear one day if I just open up like a box and it's like full of Ziploc baggies full of coffee, I'm going to be so mad at you.
Well, now you know I have to do it. You just sealed your fate there, bud.
I suppose I did. But hey, speaking of weird drinks, can check.
Yeah, I've got a Victory Sour Monkey. It's a sour triple. It's it's an old standby.
I like got a good through, sour.
Yeah, it's their twist on their Golden Monkey, if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, I do like the Golden Monkey. That's a good one.
Yeah. So, what about you?
I got a Sycamore Brewing Pumpkin Latte Blonde because I decided tonight I'm going to be a basic boy.
You know, I went to the grocery store and I was looking for like fall / pumpkin beers.
Yeah.
They're already all gone. They already have Christmas beer out. And I thought it's a little too early for that.
Like, so. I picked this up yesterday. It was basically like I kind of just had to pick what they had left.
Yeah.
Like the local brews still have theirs up, but everybody else, no, you kind of missed it, bud.
It's kind of weird, right? Like, I get why they do it, because they want to have it out before the event.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really weird. You know, you will get Oktoberfest beers start showing up like early August.
Yeah.
And then it switches over to all the pumpkin stuff, and that's September, you know, mid-September at the latest.
Right.
And now it's not even Halloween. I think I complained about the same thing last year.
It's the premise of the entire show, to be honest.
It's like, but at least you can still go buy. I don't know. But the problem with the seasonal beers is they're already gone before the ostensible holiday that they're celebrating
has arrived. Right. Like I feel like a good pumpkin beer should last at least through Thanksgiving, you know?
Right? You would think.
But apparently not. So
now we're already having to deal with heavily spiced dark ales.
Mm-hmm, to get
which,
you
don't get me wrong, not complaining, but at least let me wait until early December to start doing that. But.
Yeah, really. Like, I mean, I'll go ahead and sort of pull back the curtain a little bit. We're recording this a week before Halloween, and it's already like Christmas is here in the stores now, and it's a week before Halloween.
Ridiculous. It's pretty bad.
9 years ago when we started this show, we complained about this, and we said, like, it's so strange how Christmas just kind of pushes the other holidays back. It has not gotten better, folks. In fact, if anything, it's gotten worse.
Just more evidence that we need to ramp up the war on Christmas.
I know, like, this is a front that I'm willing to open in the war on Christmas, is the holiday beers.
It's not that I want to get rid of Christmas. It's big talk from a podcast that talks about Christmas movies all year round, but...
Oh, no.
Can we rein it in a little bit?
Everything has its place, and everything should keep that place, is all we're saying.
Day after Thanksgiving. That's all we're asking.
Brad, breaking news. I just looked at my phone and I got a Blue Sky notification. I have just been followed by Luigi's Mansion.
The Mansion?
I wonder who the hell this is.
Oh, wowie zowie.
Oh, no, it's just some dude. Okay.
Just some dude. It's Luigi's Mansion. Well, now you've unlocked the door, so welcome to Video Game Chat. How about that Mario Wonder?
I am having a great time with it. What about you?
It's very good. I'm doing completionist. I'm not going to the next world until I 100% get the little check mark on the world before it.
Yeah.
And I've got 5 of them done, not including pedal aisles.
See, I'm just trying to get through the game, so I had to put down Tears of the Kingdom to start this, so I'm taking my sweet time with it, you know?
No, that's a very reasonable approach to somebody who doesn't have brainworms like you. So, I also was actually getting back into Tears of the Kingdom. Finally getting there, but still haven't quite finished it yet.
Listen, if you're new to this show, hi, we talk about video games to forestall us actually talking about the thing we're supposed to be talking about. And if you're okay with that, we like you and you can stay. And if you're not okay with that, skip ahead a few minutes. We'll be here a while.
Yeah, your thumb should probably already be trained by skipping over all of the ads in any podcast. You know, some podcasts do like a weird, they put like a sound effect under their ads. Maybe we should do that for video game chat as a service to people who don't want to listen to video game chat.
And when it's over, you know that video game chat is over. The one thing I'll say about Mario Wonder is, and this is, then we will stop talking about video game chat. I feel weird saying this, but it's true. I'm glad to have a silly Mario Brothers game again.
Right?
You know? Like, Odyssey was great, but it felt like every other open world game you have ever played. This one is like, well...
Disagree, but...
You know, I'll walk that back. It was...
It's not open world enough. It's not like an open world game, but it's very good. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
It veered far enough from like the Mario formula where I'm like, okay, this is like, I guess this is just what games are doing now. So it's like to have a silly like 2D Mario Bros. Game again feels so, so good and so, so right.
I agree. And I was going to save this for kind of for my end of year write-up that I usually do. But I think part of what Wonder nails is sort of that back to the original spirit that Breath of the Wild did for Zelda.
Yeah.
Because when the original Mario Brothers came out, it was just such a weird game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no press, like, it's codified now, but you're a plumber running, and you grab mushrooms, and you grow big, and vines come out of block, like, it was completely nonsensical and very silly. And I feel like this new one just kind of embraces that, whereas, you know, every single Mario Brothers before this, except for maybe Yoshi's Island, just took what was already known and was sort of, you know, a cultural phenomenon and just said, yep, here's another Mario Brothers, have at it. But now you actually get unexpected things, which is nice.
Yeah, like every time you get another one of those little wonder flowers, you don't know what's coming. And that is so much fun. That's so refreshing.
I have honestly been surprised more than once. It's delightful.
It's
good
great.
Job.
Go play Mario Wonder. It's a good time, folks.
It is a good time. All right. We have wasted way too much time on video game chat, especially because we're not actually trying to delay the inevitable because we watched a good movie this time, I think.
Yeah, I was able to secure us a good movie in this Scrooge rotation.
Oh, it's like being let out for fresh air after so long.
It's like finally getting to go to recess.
That was the exact thought I had. Oh, my goodness.
Because Scrooged, to me, this is like, it's not one of the Christmas movies that I remember watching a lot as a kid. I kind of came to this one pretty much like fresh as an adult. Like, we had started the show by the time I fully watched this for the first time.
Yeah.
And I fell in love with it right away. And it's now one of my like Christmas staples. I have to watch it every season. Like, it's non-negotiable.
This was my first time watching it, and I am ashamed that I've gone this long without seeing this movie, because I loved it, and I think it might be in... It's easily in my top 10 Christmas movies. Maybe in my top 5.
That's awesome.
I love it. I love this movie.
Now,
like,
see,
there's problems with it, of course, and like... Bill Murray's delivery is like so weird, but of course he's coming off of like the high of Ghostbusters... And just channeling that, but like, it's Bill Murray, so I can't complain.
And that's pretty much like the hook of the whole movie is like, it's a Christmas Carol starring Bill Murray. That's all you need to know going into this.
80s Bill Murray at the top of his game.
Right. And it's 80s Bill Murray doing like a very like modern, edgy 80s version of the story, because like it's set in the modern day. It's about a TV executive who is just the biggest piece of shit in the world. Hi, we talk, we say swears on this podcast. Welcome to the show, folks.
Oh, right. This ain't your granddaddy's Christmas movie podcast. Anyways, right. Go on.
But this, so what the heck was I even saying?
You were saying that Bill Murray is playing a sleazeball 80s executive.
Right. And so, like, the angle they're going with is, like, this is a very modern take on A Christmas Carol. And you'd think that they would, like, kind of zig and zag a little bit with it, but they play it pretty much straight. Like, the story is the story.
And I appreciate that, I think.
Right.
And we have a bit of, a framing device where they're doing a live telecast of A Christmas Carol on Christmas Eve, and that's kind of what the whole network is gearing up for during the events of this movie.
Right.
I will say, best movie concerning a theatrical play that I've seen this year out of two.
Oh, what was the other one?
I was desperately hoping that Asteroid City had Bill Murray in it, so I could say best movie that I've seen starring Bill Murray that it concerns itself with the theater scene and has a meta narrative, but...
Oh, that would be great. That would have been great.
It would have dovetailed very nicely, but I didn't... No joy, but close enough.
Yeah, I don't remember if he was even in that, but even if he was, nah. Not
he was not... It was the, yeah, it's like the one Wes Anderson film in like the last 10 years that he hasn't been in. Just our luck. Just my luck for this dumb little sidebar.
Go figures, right? But so I guess I want to start with now, because I was going to throw at you like a bunch of numbers and other kind of bullshit, but that's the other podcast that I do.
Throw me the numbers.
Okay. Welcome to Billboarding School. Hey, folks, this is your buddy Joey Wade from OST Party. Sometimes I do this thing where I talk about stats about the thing we're talking about. So Scrooged came out Thanksgiving weekend 1988, right? It was number one at the box office with $13 million. Here's the top five for that weekend, okay? So you got Scrooged. You got number two, Land Before Time.
The OG.
The OG Land Before Time. The wow. the one true Land Before Time. Disney's Oliver and Company at number three, Cocoon Part Two for number four, and number five, guess what? It's Ernest Saves Christmas.
Cool. How's your box? Were they all open? They couldn't have possibly all been opening that weekend. That's a big weekend for movies back then.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean, it still is. It still is, but not. Yeah. It feels like not so much anymore.
No, Scrooged and Cocoon 2 were the only like two new movies that week.
What's Cocoon 2?
So Cocoon is the one with like all the old people where like they find these aliens in their swimming pool and the aliens make them young again. And Cocoon 2 is like the sequel to that.
I have never heard of these films in my entire life, but okay.
Don't worry about it.
Are they horror films?
No, they're very like kind of kind, gentle, like sci-fi movies about old people who want to be young again.
That doesn't sound that bad.
It's okay. The first one's okay. What interests me is just the sheer phenomenon of like Ernest Saves Christmas made money. You know,
well, Ernest was still a thing then, right?
Yeah, but like you think of Ernest and you think of like, you know, direct to video movies or just kind of low budget junk, but like no, Ernest was like a Disney property and Disney put Ernest in theaters in the late 80s.
What a world.
What a time we lived in.
What a time.
And you'd think Scrooged being like a big star-studded like Christmas comedy would stay number one through Christmas, right? Like that just makes sense.
Yeah.
You would be wrong, my friend, because the Arnold Schwarzenegger, Danny DeVito film Twins dominated the box office the entire month of December.
Oh, that's pretty funny. I thought it was at least going to be like another Christmas movie or like another somewhat family-friendly movie that knocked it out, but that's pretty funny.
I mean, Twins is it's okay, But yeah, Twins came out in December and was number one until January. Like, that's just amazing. And last stat note I'll tell you is that Scrooge was nominated for one Academy Award that year for Best Makeup. It lost to Beetlejuice.
That's fair.
Yeah. But there's some fair good enough. There's some good makeup effects in this.
There's some very fun stuff in this.
Yeah, because the ghosts, and we'll talk a lot about the ghosts here shortly, but the ghosts are very well done.
Yes.
I feel like if you don't nail the ghosts in your Scrooge adaptation, you've kind of failed.
What are you doing here?
Yeah, exactly. But so Bill Murray plays Frank Cross, the CEO or like the executive of the TV network called IBC. And they're, yeah, like you said, they're broadcasting a live, like, theatrical version of A Christmas Carol on Christmas Eve. And the first thing we see is like a series of promos for like the shows that they're going to put on this channel. And honestly, I would watch any one of these other promos, any one of these other shows.
That the promos already endeared me to this movie from the drop.
The first one is an action movie where terrorists besiege Santa's workshop, and the only man who can save him is Lee Majors, the $6 million man.
With like a submachine gun, with like a heavy weapons gun. It's very good.
It's called The Night the Reindeer Died. So like, my first thought with that was like, oh, The Night the Reindeer Died has like immediately failed the save the cat rule, because you know the reindeer die. Still would be great. The next one is kind of your more traditional Christmas special. It's Robert Goulet's Old Fashioned Cajun Christmas.
We get like there's like an alligator and he like looks down at it. It's lower key, obviously, but still he's like a good bit.
Pushing a raft through the bayou while he's singing Christmas carols. Like, I would watch the shit out of that. And then finally, this one's not really a Christmas anything. It's just like another show that they're doing. And I guess it's... Oh, God.
There's the Leave It to Beaver.
It's Leave It to Beaver, yeah. Well, I'm sighing because, like... Oh, God. I'm just going to put the clip in here because, come on.
9 o'clock, IBC presents America's favorite family in a special Christmas episode.
Hi, Mom. Where's Dad? Should have been home by now.
Well, Wally, if I know your father, he's out chasing beaver.
Father loves beaver. Here on IBC, you'll love it.
It's a sex joke.
It's a sex joke you can take two different ways.
But it's one you can get by the kiddies.
Because it's a Leave It to Beaver joke.
Yes.
Yeah. But then they play the actual like Christmas Carol promo that shows, you know, you've got Buddy Hackett's going to play Scrooge, and you've got Mary Lou Retton's going to play Tiny Tim, and it's going to be great. And we're broadcasting it across three continents, which is insane. And then Bill Murray immediately just hates this. I don't know why, because it's like the who, the what, the where, the how, and the why. Like it answers all the questions. But he doesn't like this, so he plays his own promo, and his promo is like, you will be murdered in the street if you don't watch this show.
It's like the film, it's like the old, I guess they probably still do this, but I haven't watched terrestrial television in years. It's like the old fear-mongering, like, film at 11 thing, where it's like, you and your family will die unless you watch this.
Yeah.
Tune in at 11. Because it's like, it has like, what, it's terrorism,
acid
drugs,
rain.
Acid rain.
You know what it reminded me of the most, though? Like, I think is the station is being modeled after like old school Fox TV. Because, like, remember back in like the early mid 90s, Fox would always do those shows like When Animals Attack or like Road Rage Incidents and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, it was always the trashier terrestrial network.
Yeah, like, that's right? that's where you saw Cops and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like that's the network that they're kind of basing this around. So, like, yeah, Fox is, like, the hip, edgy, trashy network, so let's just do that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, his promo was awful.
And but that's the one they run with. And then we have Elliot Loudermilk. He's kind of this, who I originally thought was the Cratchit stand-in.
Right.
Thank goodness he's not. Who's on the board, or who's on this group that's reviewing these, and he's suggesting to Frank to cross that ad's not very good. It's going to give people heart attack. Maybe we should go with the original one, or at least edit it down. And he's like, nope, you're fired.
Yeah. Bye. Like immediately. It's like, get this guy out of the building. And this is Bobcat Goldthwait, who is like one of those 80s comedians. Like, you don't really see him much anymore, but back in the 80s, he was like kind of a big deal, I guess.
Kind of a Rick Moranis situation.
Sort of. Yeah. Like, I know he was in a lot of the Police Academy movies.
Right.
And then also this. But like, he gets immediately like booted out of the building. They take his possessions, they kick him onto the street. And then we're introduced to the actual Bob Cratchit like analog, which is his Frank's assistant Grace. Who has a little boy who does not speak, and it's like the genuinely like the serious subplot of the movie.
Right.
And I'm only laughing because I know what else is coming, but like this, it's very sad. Like,
yeah, he's the Tiny Tim stand-in. Calvin, right?
Calvin, yeah.
Her son Calvin is the Tiny Tim stand-in. But his situation is that he is nonverbal.
Right.
And due to a psychological issue where he witnessed his father being murdered 5 years ago.
Yeesh.
And that's about as heavy as this movie gets.
It really is. Like then that's like a reveal halfway through the movie, and you're like, oh my god.
Yeah.
But those are kind of the stakes, and then we get Lou, who is like the Jacob Marley analog, is a corpse that's invaded his office, and tells him that he's got to change his ways because you can't live like this. Nobody can live like this. And Lou's whole thing was that he apparently had a heart attack on the golf course because he is like basically a zombie in like golfing.
He's a golf zombie and he's making a cocktail and a little mouse pushes a golf ball out of his skull. Come on. How can you not love this stuff? It's great.
It's wonderful. And you know, I in this scene, I noticed Frank's cocktail of choice, which was Stoli and Tab. And I wanted so bad to go track down a can of Tab to try and do that tonight, but folks, I just couldn't do it to myself.
Ah, man. If we were still doing it in person, you could have tasked us with this. I would have made it happen.
We would have Stoli and Tabbed it up tonight.
We would have been drinking Stolis and Tabs. I would have absolutely 100% been behind that. Oh, well. Another time.
Yeah. But, the stakes are set, and Lou tells Frank that he's going to be visited by three spirits, and you know how this goes, how this is going to go.
You know how this plays out, but it plays out in, they do some modern twists on it, and some New York twists on it.
I do like the detail where Scrooge says to Jacob Marley, oh, you're just a hallucination. You're a piece of undigested piece of beef or whatever. But Bill Murray says you're Russian vodka poisoned by Chernobyl.
Yes. Very timely.
Very timely in 88. Yeah.
Good job.
I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
Yeah. No, there's lots of nice little analogs that they actually slip in like this that you can see the original text.
Yeah.
Sort of underneath it. But obviously it's been updated a bit. So he informs him that he'll be visited by the first ghost noon tomorrow. And I think my favorite detail about, before he meets the ghost of Christmas past is all the sort of like hallucinations that he's having.
Oh yeah.
when he's at lunch with some of his business associates, which is another really good running gag, which I loved, which was how they need to pepper in like mice and voles and like small birds to get the attention of cats.
Yeah, his boss Robert Mitchum tells him that like scientists say that cats and dogs are watching more TV, so they should start incorporating more cat dog centric like things in the TV show. Like the example he gives is was like Kojak Right, Kojak and his thing with the lollipops. Why not have a cop whose thing is that he dangles string?
So good. And they keep revisiting it. Like, it's a dumb running gag throughout the entire movie, and I love it.
I mean, up to and including the mouse that pushes the golf ball through the guy's head.
Yes. But he's at lunch with his business associates, and he starts having hallucinations. He sees an eyeball in his cocktail with the best. There's a baked Alaska across the room. And he hallucinates that the waiter catches on fire, and you have like the full like flame suit practical effect going on of the guy on fire.
The guy's just waving his arm around. Bill Murray is losing his shit.
It's so good. It's great. I love it.
Oh boy.
Anyhow,
but yeah, we meet the first spirit, who is the ghost of Christmas Past, is a cab driver in a very old timey cab, which in my video game addled brain says like, oh, that's a cab, that's the cab from Crazy Taxi. The cab driver is played by David Johansen, aka Buster Poindexter, who if you listen to the OST party, he does get a song on the soundtrack, so that's fun. But he takes him back to the 1960s to show Frank his childhood home, where his mother is pregnant with his baby brother, and he's sitting there watching TV, and dad comes home and gives him a $5 cut of meat of veal for Christmas.
Oh, that's 5 pounds of veal there, my
pardon
friend.
Me. I'm sorry, 5 pounds. The exchange rate got me.
No, it's only because Bill Murray later comments on how that cut would be worth $45 to $50 in modern times.
Oh, that's true.
And that's why he's crying.
That's a very good, like, Scrooge bit, too, you know?
Yeah.
Like, of course he would think that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, the Ghost of Christmas Past tells him, you know, he's like, does this ever work? And the ghost says, like, when I showed Attila the Hun his mother, Niagara Falls. So apparently this happens a lot. I want to see those movies.
Right?
I want to see, like, the historical, like, Christmas Carol story where, like, Attila the Hun sees the error of his ways because a ghost told him he was going to die.
You got to do it with figures in history that had sort of a heel turn, I guess.
Or a face turn, I guess.
Oh, I guess it would be a face turn. Right. Because a heel turn is when you go good to bad.
Right.
It's a wrestling thing.
Mm-hmm.
See, I always thought that phrase meant that like you turn on your heel.
Yeah, that makes sense, too. I guess
just as somebody who never followed wrestling, like I've heard the phrase before.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, so it's like a 180 degree turn. You like turn on your heels, but no.
Right.
Anyways, a face turn. Yes.
A face turn. Yeah. I'm sure if I could think for a good second or two, I would come up with a good one. But, you know, we got to move on.
Yes.
Then we get into, you know, Frank working at the TV station, and this is where he meets his girlfriend Claire, or his ex Claire in the present. It was played by Karen Allen, and they have the meet cute where she hits him in the head with a door, and for the entire rest of the film, she calls him Lumpy because he gets a lump on his head. And
it's cute.
It's very cute. My thought was she calls him Lumpy because he reminds her of Chewbacca's kid from the Star Wars Holiday Special. Anyway. They have, you know, we see their courtship and stuff, but of course, you know how the Christmas Carol goes. He has to make a decision whether he wants to, you know, continue seeing her or whether he wants to continue pursuing his job. And of course, chooses the job.
Can we put a pin in this and say that their apartment in the 1970s is maybe one of the coziest sets that I've seen in a film in a very long time, and I want to live there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even it kind of looks a little dingy, but like the way they light it is, it makes everything to me.
It's got the nice like lighting in the kitchen where it's like soft under cabinet lighting. Oh, it's so nice.
Like the big wide open living room. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Anyhow, proceed.
He buys her for Christmas, he gets her a set of steak knives, and she gets him the Kama Sutra. that's a really awkwardly balanced relationship, but that's Frank Cross for you.
Yes. He's playing a dog in a suit and gets the opportunity to go out to dinner with the executive of the studio, or the network, and he takes it.
Right. And
the rest is history.
He's watching this and he realizes how stupid he was. So like he immediately goes over to the homeless shelter where she works now to like try and make amends with her and tell her like, I've had this experience. He can't get over himself. He just gets in his own way time and again.
He's an asshole.
He's a
big dick about the fact that she's working at a homeless shelter and tells her to forget about all that.
Yeah, he basically tells her to, like, you know, leave these suckers to their fate and save herself, which is a fucking terrible thing to tell anybody.
Right.
But, you better believe that comes back. But my favorite detail in all this, though, is like every time he's visited by a ghost, he always winds up back on the set of the Christmas Carol production.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
doesn't he?
He does. Because like after all the flashbacks, he's on like the TV studio set where he's playing the dog. And, you know, the lights kind of go down and the costume comes off. Like, oh, he's back on the Christmas Carol set again.
Everyone, they do the transition with the TV and then it's on the camera itself and he's standing there, right?
Yeah.
That was a fun little transition.
It's like good stagecraft, honestly.
They do a similar thing with Christmas Future, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
So we're still with the Grocer Christmas Present, who is played by, she's a very iconic,
Carol Kane. Actor.
Yeah.
Carol Kane, if you know her from anything, it's either the Addams Family movies or the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt or...
That's where I've seen this fool.
I knew you knew that, yeah.
Yeah, I knew she seemed familiar. And I've seen her in Addams Family, but like the bit that she's playing right now, it seems very like, yeah. Yeah,
that's her.
Kimmy Schmidt.
To a T.
She's playing the same character in Kimmy Schmidt, basically.
Essentially, yeah.
Anyhow.
She's the Ghost of Christmas Present, where she's basically a fairy who likes to beat up Bill Murray. And that's kind of the whole thing that she does.
She's a slapstick fairy.
She's a slapstick fairy.
So, yeah, she takes him to... She takes him to Grace's house.
The note that I wrote was she beats his ass and takes him to Grace's house.
As one does. And we see there, you know, it's the usual Cratchit-esque struggle where it's a family full of love and understanding, but they're just so poor.
Yeah.
Because they are underpaid.
They're getting by, but they're still having a good time.
And then that's where we find out about what happened to Calvin. Which is terrible.
Yeah.
And then we see a sick ass under the cabinet toaster, which takes me back so much. Isn't that a toaster?
I think it is. Yeah.
There were a lot of really good under the cabinet appliances. I remember I had in our house, we had an under the cabinet can opener.
Ooh.
Yeah. That was cool.
That is cool.
That was my first exposure to a can opener, was the under the cabinet can opener. I wonder why those fell off. Probably because a lot of appliances got smaller and they could probably fit in drawers, maybe.
Maybe because
storage space got better with more modern houses.
Possibly. Or
welcome to 99% Invisible. We're going to figure out what happened, why under the cabinet appliances died. I think it's a toaster, right? I can't figure out what else that thing is.
It must be a toaster. I know what you're talking about, and you're right. I can't think of what else it could be besides a toaster.
But it's got two parts. It's got like a sliding door on one side.
Yeah.
Which maybe is like the toaster. It's a combo toaster / toaster oven.
Maybe that's true. I'm thinking back to like, you know, my childhood and the under the cabinet stuff we had. The only one I really remember having is like an under the cabinet like radio, We definitely had a radio that was like sat underneath the hanging cabinet.
That's a cool one.
Yeah, it was a radio and it had a little tape deck in it too. So, you know, Mom liked to play Christmas music on it. That didn't instill any values in me, I'm sure. But yeah, that's what we had growing up.
Most useful kitchen appliance. What do you think? If you had only one appliance,
my desert island kitchen appliance.
Okay, let's back up for a second.
Okay,
you have a range, you have an oven, you have a microwave.
Yeah,
you have the big three.
Okay,
obviously you've got a sink and all that, and small stuff like can openers and bottle openers don't count. I'm talking like something you have to plug into an outlet. If you could only have one additional appliance, what would it be? Oof.
I would say, I'm going to say a blender.
Blender's a pretty good one. Oof. Actually, now I might have to rethink I was going to say toaster oven, but I've already got an oven.
Right.
But it's such a waste to fire up an entire oven to toast something. But I use the toaster oven way more than the blender. It's got to be the toaster oven.
See, we use the toaster and the oven to make different types of sandwiches using toast. Like if we want to just make, you know, an egg salad on toast, we use the toaster. But if we want to make a grilled cheese, we use the oven. So, yeah.
Dear listener, what's your favorite appliance? Hit us up on socials or even send us an email. Thank you.
At xmascreeps@gmail.com. Thank you very much.
Anyways, enough appliance chat.
Enough appliance chat.
Except we're going to get back into it because that's how he gets knocked out again.
Guess what? Toasters come back. There's a lot of appliances in this movie. Because in the next scene, the ghost takes him to his brother's house where his brother's having a Christmas party with his wife and all their friends. And he always invites Frank to the party, but he never comes. And his wife asks him, why do you keep inviting him? Because he's like, well, he's my brother. What am I supposed to do? That's a good brother right there.
That's a good brother.
But they open the gift that Frank had sent over to him. Early in the film, he's telling Grace to designate, you know, which people get towels and which people get VCRs. And he tells her to send his brother a towel. And she gives him a VCR.
Oh.
Because she knows better. So he gets
old Grace.
A fancy VCR, which like I feel like in 2023 kind of doesn't mean anything anymore. But like folks, back in the day, your VCRs were high dollar appliances.
In 88, a Pioneer VCR.
Yeah.
Not even like Radio Shack. We're talking Pioneer.
Pioneer is a top tier brand.
That's a nice ass VCR. Yes.
Oh, that's a nice VCR you got there.
Oh man, VCRs. We're just gonna reminisce about appliances and stuff. No, we can't get into VCR chat.
No, this is like a perfect movie for like you and me in our age range because like, it hits that sweet spot of like this is kind of what our childhoods looked like. And we remember so many things about, so many things like in this movie are familiar to us. And that's part of what I've keyed in on when I first started like really watching this was like, as a kid, to me, this is what Christmas looked like. It was like Christmas in New York City with like the Christmas lights and the snow falling at nighttime. This is what I always thought of like Christmas looked like as a kid. So I'm very
a small child being dressed up as a small nonverbal child being dressed up as a Christmas tree, you know.
Yeah. Oh, you know how those things
go. The usual,
you know, I'm like Kevin McAllister with Christmas trees, except, you know, sometimes you got to decorate a person.
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head there. There's a lot of stuff in this movie that's very relatable as somebody growing up as somebody who was a child in the late 80s and early 90s. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of this is very familiar, sort of warm blanket kind of stuff,
right? Like and so part of doing this show, we've watched so many movies from this era, and I think I've always kind of been a little more lenient to the ones from like the late 80s, early 90s, because I'm nostalgic for that time and place. And I realize those are like rose-colored glasses, but I can't help myself.
It's a weak spot for us, I think.
Yeah. It's a big part of why we love this movie so much, but like when there's so much else to appreciate, we'll give that a pass, you know?
I think it's still a good movie on its own merits.
It totally is. And we're running a little bit long, so let's get things moving here.
And I must say, other than maybe one or two jokes that, like, there's not a lot of like regressive, mean-spirited stuff going on in this movie for a movie that was released in the 80s.
Right.
Which I appreciate.
For like a super aggressive, like hip, cool, like comedy. Yeah. It's a little too Bill Murray, if I'm being honest, but it that brand of comedy doesn't veer off into like being mean-spirited.
Yes.
You know?
We should probably fast forward since we're almost getting in the crankometer here. You know how the rest of this goes.
Yeah, Frank has this turning point where he meets one of the homeless people that he saw at Claire's, you know, homeless shelter, but he's in the sewer and he's frozen solid. He's dead. This man has died. And Frank has that kind of moment where he realizes, like, he's yelling at him, like, why didn't you stay with Claire? She could have, you know, she could have kept you fed and warm. And he realizes at a certain point he's talking to himself. And that's kind of where he winds up back in the studio and realizes what's going on, kind of knows what's coming next. He's terrified of it because what's coming next is, guess what? Elliot Loudermilk is back and he's got a shotgun.
I did not expect this to happen. And I appreciated this a lot.
Because Elliot,
we get a little break between the ghosts,
but like seated throughout the film, like Elliot is having a worse and worse and worse day because he gets kicked out of the building. He buys a bottle of booze, immediately loses it. He winds up just sleeping on the street, and finally
buys a second bottle of booze and ends up losing it.
Yeah,
as I recall,
but ends up sleeping on the street where people are just starting to throw garbage bags onto him. So he comes back to the studio with a gun. He's going to kill Frank. And at this exact moment, Frank has his meeting with Ghost of Christmas Future, where he shows him, you know, Claire taking his lessons to heart and being, you know, a terrible, ruthless person who doesn't care about poor kids. And he sees Grace visiting Calvin in the mental hospital. Finally, you know, he sees his brother is the only person who showed up to his funeral where he's about to be cremated.
And he sees Claire, who is apparently a rich socialite now, shooing away
poor kids.
Poor kids.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, he was my main inspiration in getting rid of all that stuff.
He said, if you want to save anybody, save yourself.
Right.
Jeez.
Can I just say the costume for Christmas Future is very good.
It's fantastic. We have
like the classic Grim Reaper robe, but then its head is a CRT that's like glitching out, and that's how we get the transition into all of the different scenes.
Right. Yeah.
It's very good.
And
then we have the very good visual gag where Frank opens up the robe and there's like a bunch of little like tortured gremlin people like inside of his rib cage. It's so good. I love it.
And before he realizes that it's the Nick's ghost, he looks at it. He's like, did our people do this? He thinks it's a prop.
Because there's a fake out where he's on the set and he sees the Ghost of Christmas Future, but it's the Ghost of Christmas Future from the production coming down the lift.
Yeah. And he panics. Yeah. Oh, it's great.
It's good.
But you know, he comes out of this like he comes out of this nightmare realizing like the switch has been flipped and he's going to be a good person. It starts with Elliot. He convinces Elliot not to kill him, gives him a promotion, gives him a raise, all that fun stuff. And then they go and they hijack the production, the live broadcast. And Frank like gets on in front of the TV and starts telling all the people at home all the good things about Christmas.
Yes, goodwill towards men.
Yeah, God bless us, everyone. And like that, that last speech, man, like that's the, to me, that's like one of the best like Christmas things I think I've ever seen.
It's very good.
Cause he, and it seems like he, it honestly seems like it wasn't even scripted. They just let Bill Murray just go. And that's what he came up with. That may not be how it had happened, but like, it feels that way.
It feels genuine enough, or at least off the cuff enough.
Right. And that's all it had to be. But he makes
it's not, yeah, it's not paid. I mean, it's an Ebenezer Scrooge speech, but it's sappy, but it's not like, it's not super patronized. I don't know. It manages to toe that line between the two.
Yeah,
it's very good.
It fits with the rest of the movie, you know?
Yes.
Because like, yeah, especially when you're talking about like a Scrooge adaptation where the guy is a TV executive, it couldn't end any other way with him not, you know, addressing the people at home. So it works. I think it's great. I think it's fantastic.
I really enjoyed it too.
And just
can I
tell you a little bit of behind the scenes magic, as it were?
Well, before you do that, we'll just get into the last. Let me just finish the last tiny bits of plot.
Go for
to
it.
Wrap up.
Go for it.
He talks about Claire on TV, and she books it to the studio with the help of the Ghost of Christmas Past, mm-hmm, in the taxi. They make up, and then Calvin says, "God bless us, everyone,"
yep,
because he is, you know, he's been nonverbal up to this point, which I think is, you know, a nice touch that was his sort of quote unquote disability is not, you know, a physical one, but a mental one.
Yeah.
And so like, he's going to say the words anyways. So it adds a little bit of extra significance that's like his cured moment,
mm-hmm,
supposedly.
And
anyways.
And they seed it well in the film too, because like he sees it on TV like once or twice. So he hears that phrase. So like you see him like internalizing that.
Yeah.
All right. It works.
Please go ahead with our movie magic.
Our behind the scenes magic. My behind the scenes magic, I guess. I think the first time I'd actually seen this movie in full, it was the Christmas before we started doing this podcast.
Hmm.
And it was the Christmas after one of my grandparents had passed away. So that was a very tough Christmas for our family. But watching that and like seeing Bill Murray give this speech about like being greedy for the magic of Christmas, that put something into my brain. And then like a month later, we started doing Christmas Creeps, where we talk about Christmas movies all year round. Because I can't let this feeling and this thing go. And 9 years later, we're still doing it. And I really, really, truly feel like it's all because I watched Scrooged at the exact right moment where that seemed like a good idea to me.
Huh. Wow.
You know?
That's really cool. I had no idea that was why.
I mean, I think when we started the show 9 years ago, good Lord.
God. 9 years ago now?
Yeah, man.
Oh, my gosh.
When we started this show, our other co-hosts, you know, Johnny Five and Karen, you know, they were my original co-hosts on this. And it was, the whole idea was just, what is a stupid thing that nobody else would do? And I said, what about watch Christmas movies? Because I think in the back of my mind, I had already been wanting to do something like that.
Yeah.
And like absolute fools, they said yes.
Did you really think they were going to turn you down?
I don't know.
Those two?
You know, okay. You know, J-Man could have said, that's dumb, let's do something else. And we probably would have done something else.
But it probably wouldn't have lasted as long, I would say.
No, because if I'm being truly honest, like this kind of is where my heart is. Like, I love doing this show and I love kind of what we've built here. So this is kind of my home on the internet for the foreseeable future, folks. So
that's a really cool tidbit that I did not know.
Yeah. The more you know.
Should we take it over the crankometer?
Let's do it. Cause we're running long, folks. I shouldn't say that. We usually run long because we just like talking to each other. We like having this conversation. So folks, the crankometer is our patented XY axis for rating Christmas movies. It's the stupidest scale in the history of podcasts.
You said it, not me.
And I love it.
It's, yeah.
The original scale was how Christmassy is this given film on the scale of Christmas with the Cranks to Crank 2 High Voltage. And somehow, some way, that turned into a scatter plot.
The Crankometer.
The Crankometer. Now you know. That's where that came from. But it's an XY axis where we rate Christmas movies. The X axis is how Christmassy we think a film is. And the Y axis is how good we think the film is, like the actual like quality of the film. So, Bradford, I ask you, how Christmassy is Scrooged?
Oh, it's pretty good. It's pretty Christmassy.
Is there any reason to deduct points from this? Like, I'm asking you, like, should it be a five or not?
I'm struggling to come up. I mean, it's a classic Christmas story, and it's set in New York in the late 80s in Christmas, which is, in our weird American-centric brains, like, about as Christmassy as it gets.
Yeah.
Right? And then, it's pretty damn Christmassy. We got Christmas parties going on all over the place. We got Christmas music.
And you know, I think the most important thing, it doesn't misuse sort of the message of Christmas, or the message of A Christmas Carol, for that matter, because, like, it really does kind of nail that sort of spirit, yeah, spirit of togetherness and spirit of giving thing perfectly well.
I'd say this is worthy of a five.
This, yeah. I mean, at this point, we're talking ourselves out of doing a five at this point. So this is definitely a five on the Christmas scale. Now, the quality quotient, how, the y-axis, how good is the film? Brad, this is your first time watching this. What did you think, bud?
I really enjoyed this. Like I said earlier, I think this might be... This is definitely in my top five Christmas... Top 10, top five, yeah, Christmas movies.
That is high praise right there, folks.
I don't think it's going to knock like Tokyo Godfathers off of the top spot,
right,
or A Christmas Story out of its, you know, ensconced place in my heart.
Yeah.
Bill Murray's delivery is like, it's kind of weird in places, but that's 80s Bill Murray.
That's true. Like, apparently the rule, or the direction that he got from Richard Donner, who, hey, we hadn't even talked about Richard Donner yet. He also directed Lethal Weapon. So this guy knows Christmas.
Yeah.
But the direction he got from Donner was like, do it bigger, do it louder. So Bill Murray really definitely goes for it.
Yeah, there's like weird... I mean, it's a Christmas comedy movie with Bill Murray, and he's just, some of his reactions are like so over the top that it kind of pulls you out a little bit. And I think that's my only complaint with this movie.
It's extremely Bill Murray. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like he'll be like yelling in like a homeless shelter, or he'll be like deadpan at his own funeral. And it's like, it pulls you out a little bit. I think that's the only, it's more my personal feelings about Bill Murray in this era than anything, I guess.
Well,
but I still love it.
I think you're totally on point though. Like that's definitely like the weak link is Bill Murray being so Bill Murray about everything.
He's almost being a caricature of himself,
yeah,
a little bit at that point, like, because everybody knows and loves Bill Murray, like, so he's being Bill Murray too much,
almost like they're asking him to like just do it like Bill Murray does it, you know,
say the line, Bart, like that. it's kind of that,
yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that's my only complaint about this movie. Like I said, it's not a gross, or, you know, it, a lot of movies in the 80s have this, they're a product of their time, and they're like, they have gross jokes in them, or they take pot shots at marginalized people. This doesn't really do that, to its credit.
Yeah.
I think it's a four.
I think it's a,
if
it's
I could, a I know, solid. I know we don't do points, but if I could give it a point, I'd give a 4.5, but
right,
I think it's a four.
I think this is a solid four. Like you said, it's the Bill Murray-ness of it all. It can get a little grating, and I'm not one of these people, but I know a lot of people think that like the movie just kind of stops when he gives that speech, and they just like, well, what else do we do? But that's kind of how A Christmas Carol ends too. So I don't have a big problem with that, really.
I mean, it's the last 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
It's the ending. It's not like it's... That's the conclusion. It's stopping because the movie's over. But anyway,
I mean, the only way it could have been better is if we had Robert Goulet come back and, like, narrate the end of Bill Murray's story. But that's just...
That'd be pretty funny.
That's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I'm perfectly happy with a 4. This is... It's not a perfect Christmas movie, but dang, is it a really good one.
It's a good Christmas movie.
So
I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, and I'm glad we finally got the opportunity to talk about this on the show, because, like, it's been a long time, and it's been one that people have been asking us, like, when are you going to do Scrooged? And, you know, I don't really have a good excuse as to why we haven't. We just, you know, this is one of those ones that we kind of save and reserve for a really good time.
Look, there's so much garbage out there. If we did all of the good movies all at once at the very beginning, and then we just had this horizon of garbage staring us in the face, I don't think we'd be able to do this show.
Yeah.
You gotta space it out.
Right. I mean, right? You don't come to us for our opinion on It's a Wonderful Life. You come to us for our opinion on Santa Jaws.
You come to us for our extensive coverage of Rap City Street Kids.
Absolutely. And, you know, one...
I still love Rap City Street Kids so much.
I think about it like twice a week.
Christmas.
Oh, man. But so this is also, you know, not just Christmas podcast day, which is what we're doing this for, but it's also sort of an entry into Home for the Horror Days, which we haven't even talked about yet. Because, you know, this is one of those scary ghost stories that they like to talk about in Christmas songs. And I felt like it counted. But, you know, we really did kind of whiff on Home for the Horror Days this year. And that's partly my fault. I just got busy, you know. Things happen. People get busy. People go on trips to Disney World and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm still kind of feeling in the horror mood, Brad. I don't know about you.
Yes. All the spooks.
So, J-Man, or Johnny Five, kind of suggested this to us, you know, about a month ago. He said, why don't y'all extend Home for the Horror Days into November and call it Shrieksgiving? And I said, you know, that's a great idea. And considering that we really kind of didn't talk about Saint like we were supposed to, I think that's a perfect opportunity for us to talk about some more Christmas horror films. Brad, what do you think?
I love this idea, and I'm 110% behind it.
Yeah.
I don't think the spookiness should end with Halloween. It should just be the start of the spookiness. The days are getting shorter.
Mm-hmm.
The nights are getting colder. The frights are getting bolder.
Ooh, I like that.
Yes.
I like that a lot. The spooky Advent season, as it were.
I love it.
I don't know, man. Yeah.
We should creep it. We should creep. Okay. Here's the new deal.
Okay.
Christmas has been encroaching on Halloween for far too long. It's about time we make Halloween encroach on Christmas.
Ooh.
Ooh, spooky. Bring back the scary ghost stories, please. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. I'm sitting here staring at a poster for a brand new horror film coming out this season called Werewolf Santa.
God.
With the tagline "Seasons Eatings," which is just fantastic. But
there you go.
I have been accruing a number of new horror films in our catalog of Home for the Horror Days potential movies. So there's tons of possibilities out there. I'm not going to call our shot right now because you know us, that usually ends in failure. But yes, in November, come on back. We will be talking about more holiday horror films. I feel like we've only just barely scratched the surface of this genre, and I want to explore it more. And Bradford, if you're willing and able, I would love to do this with you, buddy.
You know I'm here for it.
Great. I cannot wait. So, folks, that's been Christmas Creeps for this week. If you're just joining us from Christmas Podcast Day, welcome. I hope we've entertained you with our discussion of Scrooged, and I hope you go find our back catalog. listen to some of our other episodes, we've covered all kinds of strange and sundry Christmas films of years past. But you can find all that on our website at christmascreeps.com. You can also send us anything you'd like at xmascreeps@gmail.com. You can also follow us on all the socials. You can follow us on Twitter and Blue Sky, Threads, Facebook, we're in Instagram, wherever you social, we're probably there. That includes YouTube as well. So definitely do that. And while you're at it, hey, this is a podcast, and you're probably listening to this on a podcatcher. So why not leave us a star rating and a review to tell other people listening that this is a show that you enjoy and is worth their time. I would personally really appreciate that.
I would too.
Bradford, I've been monopolizing the end of this episode. Was there any final thoughts you'd like to give on Scrooged or anything else?
I just want to thank the listeners for listening. We know you have a lot of different choices when it comes to media, and we really appreciate you taking the time out to hang out with us.
Yeah.
Thanks.
This is our weird little corner of the internet, and you're always welcome to come on back. So, yeah, come on back in November, and we'll talk about some more Christmas horror movies. Bradford, thank you so much for joining me. I always enjoy our little conversations.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, absolutely, sir. That's gonna do it for Christmas Creeps, folks. So we're sending you off into November. Season's greetings, and
get ready for extra innings. You thought the frights were over. There's a whole feast of spooks and scares waiting for you around the bend. Good night, everybody.
More like Five Nights at Joey and Bradford's.
Don't.